Hello.
Hello.
You are on the air, madam.
You heard me?
You didn't swear, so that's cool.
Thank God.
Go right ahead.
I'm calling as a regular citizen. I don't know about the laws too much, not the politics in this thing, but as a regular consumer, I want to give my 2 cents worth.
Mm-hmm.
My 50 cents, as a matter of fact. I believe the insurance, when you rent these public, when these private owners pay insurance for the vans, they include the passengers also. So if the insurance gone up for them, I believe that these school children don't respect these vehicles. They want Kenneth to 250 as far as they're concerned, because they will stop catching them and catch the transport board, because transport board let them work for free and just get up on the vans and behave in the most disgraceful way and get in a lot of stupidness and mash up the people's vans and still go up here. These people is humans just like me or you. They got to live and they got families to support and bills to pay. You can't take bread out to people so all the time. Things hard as I say is, if you got free public transportation, take it and go ahead.
I understand what you're saying, but you're also raising the issue, another issue, which I think should also come, should form part of this debate, which is looking at the behavior of the school children
on
not only on the minibuses, but also on the transport board buses.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And the thing about it is that we've heard Sandra Ford making the point, look, we haven't had new buses since 2006. Okay, they're working to try to keep the buses on the road. But at the same time, the school children are not respecting property and they're damaging the buses.
They're breaking out the windows, they're licking them up, cutting up the seats. You can't sit on, you can't take a drive and be comfortable when school children up on the bus. I'm a school child, I remember them times, but I know it ain't like how these people was. These people are. This is something else.
My dear, what you think?
I want to say this. Mm-hmm. They're making noise about 50 cents. The law already says $2. If you carry up to $2, $2 because you're paying insurance for one or two. Because if when I get hurt from my van, when I'm looking for money, they purely cat the bread. They don't complain when they sell flour, gonna and cat the bread. They're still buying it because they want to eat it. So if you don't want to pay my $2, don't get on my bus. That's my 2 cents worth. 50 cents.
All right, ma'am, I respect that. And this person here saying, I'm a senior citizen who would like to make it known that I would like to be able to drive on the transport board bus, even if I have to pay. I don't want to drive on a ZR. Parking in like sardines is inhuman and inhumane. So that is his take on it. You're on the air. Good afternoon. It's 103. We go until 2. You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Blessings upon you and all the radio station.
And same to you,
my dear. In my opinion, the whole thing with the ZR start wrong. If you hustling to get paid, obviously it's going to be that kind of behavior. If the ZR drivers or conductors, whatever, were given a flat salary, I don't think they would hustle. But if you're the owner of a ZR and you want all this money come in, then these people are going to hustle to make sure they get their part. Next thing, the ZRs are not driven by children. They are driven by adults. So that tells me the kind of behavior that the children display on the bus, and that is tolerated. The ZR people encouraging that behavior. When there should be letting them children understand, you cannot get in here and behave like that. Music. Because sometimes you driving past ZRs, and the driver bobbing his head and skinning his teeth and carrying on just like these same children in the bus. When children at home, sometimes they behave in a particular way. From the time they're out, there's something different. And nobody is there to tell you that your child this or your child that. If you do tell them, the parents saying this is none of your business. So the whole culture, the whole behavioral pattern, the whole response that the ZR drivers and those that are supposed to be responsible going through, the children ain't going to be no different. You understand what I'm saying? These drivers, they're hustling. But if you play them a flat rate, I believe that some of this culture will stop. I don't believe that everything should be free. There's a system change. We have been too accustomed to freeness. So that when something happens, we're looking for the government to do everything. Go in other countries, and you will see how you got to pay for this, that, next, and the third. But this freeness we're accustomed to, we can't understand that times have changed, things have changed, and therefore everybody got to foot the bill. I love my Barbados, and I'm going from here to live nowhere. I will visit and come back.
I'm with you. Best place in the world. But I want you to tell me something. Do you take the bus at all?
No, I don't anymore.
You don't take the bus?
No.
I see. Because I was wondering if you did, and if you feel that we should be looking at a sort of privatization of the bus service, where you would have, a transport board, yes, where that would take care of the school children as well as the elderly. And so, then everybody else, all the people who are working, they will simply pay. And the whole thing is it's between the transport board and the PSVs, you know?
I want
to get some reaction to you from that. That's the idea that I'm pushing.
No, if you have the transport bus giving the children free right to school, sometimes you pass a school bus and it ain't really full. If you have it free now to the transport and children still going on the ZRs, what does that tell you? That the ZR men are tolerating this ignorance. They are not, to me, they do not care about our children. And sometimes I wonder if these people still have families living, if they have brothers, sisters, children, mothers, aunts. I wonder if these people have families living. They do not take proper responsibility as adults. You in my house, you got to behave a particular way. If you ain't doing that, get out.
All right, my dear.
We have lost all the morals and the values that we came up with. Mm-hmm. When my children were going to school, they could not disrespect a teacher. Because in my opinion, if you go and disrespect a teacher in class one, and I go down there behaving like I met myself and getting on, that my behavior is going to ruin you, my child, throughout that school life. And then you leave that primary school and go to secondary school, the teachers who know that you got a grandmother that is coming to get on, and they're going to pay you no money. So if you learn, you learn.
All right, thank you. Someone here is saying Mr. Lee needs to urgently address. What Mr. Lee needs to urgently address is the constant overloading and loud and lewd music that's played every single day on those PSVs. And the other thing that's gaining traction here on the WhatsApp relates to the government buildings. But before we go back to that, we'll take another call. You're on the air. Good afternoon. It's 1:08. We go until 2.
Good afternoon, Sanka.
Yes, good afternoon, sir.
How are you doing?
I am well.
Yeah, Sanka. Regarding this issue with the bus fares, the question I have to ask is, how did we get here? And I remember years ago, we had ACME producing minibuses in Barbados, and we had a well-run private transportation system. And I'd ask the question, how did we get here in terms of ended up in, as the previous caller alluded to, ZRs, where you're packing like sardines? And I think the overall problem that we have is that we don't seem to have a vision for where we want to take transportation in this country. And it's just a get what you pay for thing. Because if you're paying $2, which is one of the cheapest bus fares in the world, you're really getting what you've paid for, right? And I think that we need to look at this transportation system. We need to recognize that the poor working class are the people who are the ones who use this transportation. And any reasonable government will want to keep bus fares at that price. which is fine. But my thing is, what is our strategy then for keeping bus fare at that price? Because we're not saving any money. We're throwing $40 million or whatever behind the transport board. And as Mr. Lee worked out, the number of passengers, then that works out to almost $9 a passenger. So we're already spending the money, but we're not getting the results. We're not getting the returns. And what I'm saying is that we need to look at a strategy where we can have a proper transition system. We can have proper buses. We can keep bus fare at $2. And we can subsidize it. If school children need to be at $1.50, we can subsidize that as well. But it just needs to be a well-thought-out strategy to make it happen. But it seems like we're constantly kicking the can down the road and not addressing this whole transportation issue. An economy depends on how it's able to move its masses of people. And until we recognize that, we need to move our workforce cheaply and get them to work on time and impact productivity, we will forever be seeing this as just a bad behavior issue or overcrowding issue. It's more than that.
Mm-hmm. All right, sir. Well, thank you, Brass Tacks. Sir, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Yes, good afternoon. You're on the air, sir.
Yeah, good afternoon to you, sir. In regards to this program that you have, when you started out with the bus fare system, I really believe as well that the 50 cents that the people are crumbling about, I mean, that may be negligible to a certain category of people, right? But at the same time, if you look at some of these children, the amount of lunch money they have, the expensive bags on the back, I mean, I believe the 50 cents is coming here or there. So I really don't believe it should be a big issue, right? But I really didn't call about that. I called to talk to you about your program you had the other day, the People's Parliament.
Yeah, go ahead.
You had Reverend Attlee on the program, mm-hmm. and you were trying to ask him questions about the policies of the Barbados Labour Party. Every time he gave you an answer, he tried to tell you that this is his personal opinion. He didn't tell you this is the party's opinion.
He said so on three separate occasions. I noted it.
You noted it?
It was three separate occasions. And he said so twice in answering one particular issue. I don't have those notes in front of me, but I remember he made three references to it.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. And also you had Miss Eastman there, and mm-hmm. she gave a long profile of a former minister of government under the Barbados Labour Party.
Mm-hmm.
She gave her substantial statements in certain areas. But if you look at some of the issues you were talking about, the health issue, I mean, the Queen Elizabeth Hospital has been in problems in both governments, and whatever the situation may be in terms of statutory corporations in Barbados, I believe both governments, previous and now, have a part to, I would say, put it where it is. There are too many things that have gone wrong between the education system and also the health matter. Now, let's go to education. The outgoing president of the BUT, Mr. Pedro Shepherd, he lamented the fact that he would like to see the 11-plus system change. Now, personally, I'm over 50, and I will say to you that if this is the only practical system that we have to bring us all to where we are today, including Pedro Shepherd, including yourself, I don't see what are you going to do to change it and how are you going to change it. And if you talk about zoning, that is not going to work. You see the problem.
Hold on. Zoning is a separate thing.
No, I said if we talk about zoning, it's not going to work. Right? I also look at the fact that here's a country of an average 280,000 people, a small country, and we're trying to do things in the international standard size. And I don't believe that we have the capacity to do it. Because the 11-plus examination is the only tool that we have had to bring the students out of secondary level, out of primary level, sorry, into secondary level. And I think it's a pretty fair system.
Sir, you said it's the only tool we have had.
Yes.
Those were your words.
Right.
And I'm saying to you that it is the option that we have been using consistently for the last several years before my time. and I'm closer to 60. So all I'm, but there are other ways of doing what we do. Okay, whether we want to adopt those ways is a different matter, but it's not the only way. There are people who are professionals in this area, psychologists and whatnot, and they have been saying for decades that quite a few children are negatively impacted by this whole system of doing the 11 plus. They're disadvantaged because a lot of them are not ready, they're traumatized, etc., etc. So, you know, you can't just say it's the only system. It is not the only system.
Mr. Price,
it is the option that we've decided that we are going to keep, and we are persisting with it for good or for bad.
You said to me that the professionals have said that a lot of children have been traumatized concerning the 11 plus examination.
This argument has been coming up now. Okay, I've worked at the Nation for 25 years and 3 months. So that's like 29. Okay. So for the near 30 years I've worked at the Nation, plus the 10 or 15 years before that, I've been hearing these same arguments about the 11 plus, year in, year out. And, you know, it comes up when it's like a 9-day wonder.
But you
9
said,
days
you
before
said
and 9 days after.
But you said just now that you said to me that those were my words. And I up to now, you haven't heard what other system you would use to bring
prime. I didn't suggest another system. I wouldn't dare suggest another system because I don't think I'm competent enough to talk about another system. I'm just simply telling you that there are other means of testing constantly doing it. This has been talked about over a period of time. But the whole point about it is it's not the only option. That's the only thing that I'm saying to you. It is not the only option. And you see, why I'm stressing on that aspect is because I keep hearing in certain things in this country that this is the only way to do this, and this is the only way, this is the only option we have. About the 11 plus, about other things. And it irks me. It irks me because I simply refuse to believe that there's only one way to do anything. Because we are too innovative. Human beings are very innovative. And we find different ways of achieving and getting a greater level of efficiency or effectiveness in doing whatever we're doing. So that's the only reason I even responded to you on that.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
All right. You gone? Okay. You're on the air. It's now 1:20.
Yes, hello, good evening.
Yes, good afternoon. Make sure and turn that radio down. I'm listening to myself talk.
Uh-huh, yes, please. I would like to make a contribution on the program, please.
Yes, go right ahead.
Are you on?
You're on, yes.
Sure, sorry, I did not even realize it was on. I thought it was speaking to an operator or something. That's why the radio was on. Sorry about that.
Not a problem.
Yeah, I called to speak about the raising of the bus fare for the children also.
Normalizing of the bus fare from $150 to $2.
Yeah.
Not raising.
Yeah.
The PSV guys can't raise bus fares. They're not.
Did anybody look at the act? Why nobody didn't bring the act to the public and say, well, this is it or this is it? We just hearing what the PSV say.
But Mr. Lee alluded to that as well as Roy Raphael yesterday, that really and truly it is supposed to be $2.
I hear that, but I say nobody has brought the act and read the part that says it is $2 for everybody, including the school children. That's the point that I was making. I just hearing them. I have not heard no person at all from the ministry.
Minister Lashley, we were in communication, and I can assure you that Minister Lashley will be making a statement, or at least a statement will be coming out on this matter. That assurance has come from Minister Lashley. Today is cabinet, don't forget. And he or the ministry will be issuing a statement on this shortly.
That sounds a little better to me, but on the whole...
The ministry is, and for those who keep saying, like somebody who just wrote here, that I'm always defending the government, I think that we need to be try to be fair as possible. And I like to be fair if there's one thing about me. If I think the government doing foolishness, I can be first to say so. But if I think that you need to take a step back and listen to what they have to say, I will say that. And the Ministry of Transport and Works and the minister, they are quite aware of the how the public is feeling, and they have made it clear to me that they will be issuing a statement on the matter, so we can listen out for that as well.
That sounds a little better to me, but I'm speaking out on transport in general.
Yes, go right ahead.
Yes, there's this little small one, 66 Bear Island. I just can't figure out why somebody cannot sit down and work out a proper plan for the transport system. It is obvious, number one, too many ZRs, minibuses, and those sort of buses on certain routes. There are too many. And then there are other routes where people cannot get buses and there's no transport, especially in the country. I feel it for myself. If a person has X amount of like ZRs, minibuses, whatever, give them some short routes and give them some long routes too. You can't get all the short routes to get all the money and transport. But you see transport buses, if they're going to the country, they're always full. But if they're going the short routes, it's like everybody in the minibus and ZRs, and just you see a couple old people, and no, somebody has to like work out this transport system proper, and it can be fixed. But I feel there's too much politics in it. Too many people, big up friends, whatever you say, you might want to dismiss what I say, have all these ZRs that are making the money, and nobody don't want to touch them. And that is why after all of these years, the ZRs and the minibus could do the stupidness on the road, have X amount of convictions, not really convictions, what you call them, going to the court for all these different things. Mm-hmm.
The different charges for different things, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, people could just see these things. I don't have a bus problem because I'm on a short route, so many buses up and down, up and down, up and down. But then they have to hear people in the country, and they're from the country. So I know what it is like to be in the country and to stand up for hours and cannot get a bus, and it's hurtful. And not only that, I do not agree with you with this privatizing of no transport system, because as you see, by 8 o'clock, those vans don't work anymore when there's no big set of money to be made. They don't work.
Mm-hmm. Somebody actually here is saying 7 o'clock. But you see, what I'm talking about is that this thing, any privatization thing that I'm pushing, that I'm really discussing here, because I'm just throwing it in for people to discuss about it, and I'm very happy to hear what you've said. You have a licensing authority. The whole idea of a licensing authority is that they are regulators. In other words, they should be saying, okay, the Silver Sands route, that given the volume of traffic on that route, volume of mental traffic, I mean of commuters, yeah, on that route, they need consistently a bus service from, say, 5:30 in the morning to maybe 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. in the morning. Okay, so they need X amount of vehicles, whether they're transport board buses or whether they are minibuses. And the point is that, so instead of having, and if those, the number that they think that they need, given the volume of commuters, is 50, then they have 50. But it's, what you have instead is that on that route, I mean, You don't lack for a bus, okay?
That was the point I was making.
I know that's the point you're making, which was a very valid point. But yet, okay, if you live somewhere like Boarded Hall, you can't, yeah, get a bus, okay? And
yeah,
that is,
yeah,
the,
yeah,
problem. And yeah, so when I'm talking about a privatizing the whole system, you let the regulators, which is the licensing authority, regulate it so that you don't have too many of these PSVs, or too many vehicles, public service vehicles, on one route, and then on, yeah, another route, there's none. The, yeah, Bush Hall, for example.
Yeah.
I mean, you always getting buses
always
going Bush Hall. Always.
I
mean, without a problem, you know? But yet you can't get one going up Bibby's Lane side to St. George, okay, and those areas, you know?
Yeah.
That cannot be right.
About the night, because as you see, because my children have to catch the bus at night also, and they can't catch the bus that will come by us in the day. They have to catch another one to get off further and walk in because as 8 o'clock gone, no more buses or they have to go.
And this is where regulation comes in because when you are no regulated, you can't just decide, well, look, you know something, I ain't getting much traffic, so I don't work. No.
You have
to be servicing the route. And that is where the regulators come in. So what we're talking about here is that we have a very weak regulation.
Yes, I agree with that. But if they will regulate everything, then as you say, it's the privatization from late morning till you, we know that buses usually run until midnight. So if everything is regulated, minibus, that are also private and public, and everything is regulated in a proper manner, I feel it can work.
Yes, my dear.
I feel so.
Enjoy this conversation with you. Thank you. Please call again. Really did. Okay. You're on the air. Good afternoon. It's 1:27. We finish at 2. Go right ahead. Yes, you're on the air, sir. Hello? You're on the air. Yes, go right ahead. This is Brass Tacks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
All right. I call about a pot. I live in St. Christopher Limestone area, and I had a pipe running there, no symbol, 6 weeks, bare water going down the hill.
Where is this? You said St. Christopher?
And Limestone. The
pipe burst in Limestone. Okay.
Yes, 6 weeks, bare water going down the hill. Okay. And a lot of other people, they cannot get water.
So it means it's so serious that it's caused people not to have a supply?
People getting water. The party houses, the body and living in the house.
You lost me.
The very water running, the man ain't live there anymore. That is his point that burst. Bare water going down the hill.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Well, I have the address here, and I'll try to pass it on to the Barbados Water Authority for you. All right. Bye-bye. Thank you very much for calling. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Yes, I'm holding on.
And you are on the air. You're the third lady straight. This is the first time I've ever heard that on Brass Tacks. But
although I'm hearing somebody on right now.
No. Don't listen to your radio.
Just,
the only voice you're going to be hearing is yours. So just listen to the telephone. You see? Turn the radio off.
Okay.
Good.
Good afternoon, Sanka.
Yes, it is.
Yes. How are you?
I am well.
Yes. I just want to allude to the, I think, the previous caller that spoke about the common entrance.
Okay.
I just want to...
this is my friend.
Yes.
Okay.
I just want to let him know that there are other ways and means besides the common entrance.
Yes.
There's a thing called continuous assessment.
Right.
And I do agree that you put children sometimes who are not able, ready, or can do that exam. And it really is an exam, really, to fail you. So let him know that there are other avenues for testing children. And one is continuous assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the one that I believe in.
Well, could you give me a little bit, well, not me, but the whole Barbados, a bit more information on continuous assessment?
I believe, and I always believe this from way back when, over at least 15 years ago, I was speaking about it. When a child is at preschool, what you call maybe kindergarten, the teacher should be so well trained that she or he should be able to have an idea what type of child or what areas, what developmental stages that child is showing. Am I right or wrong?
Mm-hmm. That continues to be said.
I do, and I think that children should be from that level evaluated. So the parent and the teacher, where the child is at, has an idea. Because not all children, Sanka, are academic. Not all. And sometimes you can tell from early what path a child can go down. You might have one or two that you might not be able to. When that child goes into primary, remember years ago there was a criterion test? Remember that? Or you don't know about that?
Vaguely.
Okay. Anyway, I personally think that in primary, you should continue to assess and evaluate that child. I don't believe, and that should continue. Because this common entrance, okay, it is not geared and set up for everyone. So what happens? Some children are left behind. And I think it is really unfair. And there are other ways and means that can be structured to include all the children. Because then you have the children at the top and the children at the bottom. And the children at the bottom, it's not fair to them to sit in a classroom for 2.5 hours to do a paper that they cannot really and truly understand, reason, or write. So I just wanted to really allude to him that there are other ways and means that can be structured and looked into. The common entrance is not the all and all of a child's life. Mm-hmm. And that is what we tend to make it. Yeah. That is the end all of a child's life. And we still have this stigma that you must go to certain schools. That has to be removed.
Mm-hmm. Someone here is saying that the criterion reference test in primary still continues.
Yes, that's what I thought. You knew about it.
Sometimes you know about these things, I really can't remember it. Another person here is saying, no, I'm not. Continuous assessments have their inherent issues too. Worse is the policing of the persons involved in the assessing. We need to have discipline through our professional bodies instituted first if you wish to use continuous assessments. How do you respond to that?
Correct. Okay. I do agree with that. But I still think, yes, all areas, Sanka, would have its issues, its shortcomings. Mm-hmm. Nothing is perfect in life. But I am saying that because, especially in this present day that we are living in, children are different to say when you were growing up and I was growing up. Am I right?
They certainly are.
Correct. Therefore...
And Ronnie here is nodding his head too.
Correct. And I think that's across the board. And so I personally think, and this is my own opinion, I personally think that the system should be so set up and geared that all children, regardless of the challenges they have or no challenges, should be able to tap in to that mm-hmm. particular child. But we do not really and truly have that system right now. So, yes, whatever kind of assessments, evaluations, whatever you want to call it, I really think that that should be started from as early as 4 years old. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, you can, with technology and all that, you can know. Years and years and years ago, when I was a girl, you didn't know if a child had dyslexia. You didn't know if a child had attention deficit disorder. You thought that the child was just not hearing.
Yeah.
Right or wrong?
True.
Correct. But mm-hmm. we know today. Mm-hmm. We know that today.
Yeah.
So naturally, that is where we have come with education.
Yeah.
And I am saying that I would like to see that. So the gentleman that called in, he maybe is still thinking that common entrance is the rare at all. Mm-hmm. For the end of our life, and I don't agree with that.
Okay.
Because there are children who are late developers.
Yeah.
Late developers. And I really do think a parent should know that before the 5th of May when the common entrance is.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than put a child through a common entrance and hoping that by God's grace that child gets into quote-unquote the stigma, one of the good schools. What is a good school, Sanka? All the schools, in my opinion, are the same. The same curriculum, the same teachers. All right?
Yeah.
But we have everybody in a little slot. A little slot. And I don't really agree with that.
All right.
So,
thanks a lot.
I just want to allude to that. So thanks a lot and have a wonderful day.
You too. Take good care. The issue is, of course, the 11 plus. So apart from the buses, the issue is the 11 plus. And this person is saying the caller who talked about the 11 plus is what's wrong with their thinking. The only thing constant is in life is change. The whole world has changed educationally. The world has changed from the industrial age to the computer internet age. Beijings who think like that caller are content to remain dinosaurs and complain that things hard in Barbados and look for handouts from government. And this other person is also saying that the 11 plus has to go. But I have a caller here chomping at the bit. How are you, sir?
I am fine, Sanka.
Good.
And how are you?
Oh, I am inundated here with so many messages from WhatsApp. People are very into what is happening in terms of this 50 cents additional cost that they have to pay. And they're now onto the 11 plus, and they're also interested in what is happening in terms of the maintenance of government buildings. And now that I have you here, I'll just say this one before I let you make your contribution.
No problem.
Someone is saying talking about the whole situation with the FTC, and that person is saying that the FTC has made a decision that the Barbados Light and Power will be able to recoup the amount of money that they spent on the solar plant. And really and truly, this is also a major issue. But I suspect that Barbadians will only recognize how serious an issue it is when they start seeing some higher bills. But anyhow, sir, you've called. What would you like to share with us today?
I really had on my mind primarily the minibus situation.
Yes, go ahead.
This bus, when I saw the bus on fire this morning, and then that one going with it about the bus fare, I am fully sympathetic with the minibus charging the extra 50 cents. But I am more concerned about where we are going as a country in relation to transportation. And that sector, I am a believer that we need to privatize the complete industry. There is absolutely no need for us to continue with a public transport board. Under our current management systems, we are poor and we cannot sustain $60 million, which is really the actual figure that we are paying. And that is how Mr. Lee is arriving at the $7. I don't think that somebody called in and asked how he arrived at the number.
Yeah.
If he's taking the amount of people that are being transported by the transport board annually, along with the subsidy, and dividing it out, and that's how he's arriving at the number. It's a very simple calculation.
Yeah.
So what I'm proposing is that we look seriously and I think that the private sector, the minibus sector, need to come together and form the company that is required to take the country forward and stop leaving it to government. What has to happen is that we need the country divided into two corridors, which is from Christchurch, St. Philip and Christchurch into Bridgetown, and the balance of the country running under two separate private entities. This would be totally regulated by the Barbados Transport Authority, and buses would be running on schedule rather than competing with each other, because there will be the single entity running transport on the routes assigned, which would be based on those two divisions that I told you. As long as we do that, they can then move to the next step immediately, which would be that the apps would be engaged so that people on the route now would know when the bus, because it would be a scheduled operation, when the bus would be on the route, so they would know that they have reliable transportation coming, because there is nobody better to run transportation in the private sector at the moment. No minibuses stay off the road for 2 days to change a clutch, to change brakes, nothing. They happen overnight. No government operation gets that efficiency. So we need to move with the times and just get it done. Just get on with it. There's a lot more that can be said in relation to how that can work out in detail in relation to that, to the privatizing of the transportation. But that is the direction we need to go as a country, because we, the taxpayers, can't sustain $60 million a year. I think it would probably cost about $5 million to keep the Barbados Transport Authority in operation and pay for old people to travel on the bus free. So every time you get on the bus, you will be a ticket, and therefore you would know when a person is a pensioner, they would be given a specific ticket, and that would be refunded through the government, and there would be no need to pay for them to pay. But all the other people would commute, all other transporters would be commuted at the price that is the going price on the transportation. And it would be efficient and it can work. But it requires the Minibus Association coming together so that it would be one ownership, because it would be divided over routes. It can't be special routes as it currently is. It would be one owner owning a sector of the country. So it would be like coming from St. Philip, so that this, it doesn't matter whether you are on Silver Sands or on Boarded Hall, because it's owned by the same company.
Okay. I understand you clearly, and I've gone down that road, but I understand you clearly, and I think that it really needs a lot more discussion on this matter. We take another call. It's 1:46. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, sir. Stop listening to your radio.
All right, the radio's off. How are you doing, Sanka?
I am fine, thank you.
Mm-hmm. There are two issues. There's the issue with the bus service.
Mm-hmm.
There are the issue with the provision of parts, which is extremely costly. Mm-hmm. There's the issue with the maintenance of the bus fleet, and the issue with buying and purchasing new bus fleets. The problem with our bus service is that we are unable to finance the purchase of new bus fleets. The present system of the minibuses, they're run based upon, they are not confined by law to run for any specific periods. Outside of the peak hours, they run as they like. If you have a system that is a national bus service, there will always be losses. There will always be difficulties, because they sometimes run with two people on a bus, and they don't do like the minibus and wait until it's full to move. So the frequency that you're speaking of in terms of time periods and when it passes and so on, the present private concessionaires do not conform to any timeline as to when things are to be done.
There's no regulation, sir. Or rather, you said there's very little regulation.
There's extremely little regulation. And when it comes to a private concessionaire who's investing his money, regulations can become something around his neck that will drown him, because he can be over-regulated to the extent that you make no money, and they're in it to make money, not in it to be regulated.
But, sir, the fact about the matter is that if the whole thing was properly regulated, there wouldn't be need for all this hustling and bad behavior that we get on the streets. But you can't, there's a need for a comprehensive approach.
Well, I agree that there's a need for a comprehensive approach. But you cannot impose the same type of regulation on a government entity as you can on a private entity. You can't. People carry court.
That is why there's need to be a rationalization of the whole service, as a lady said earlier this afternoon.
But that's one area. Mm-hmm. I made a comment on that. The other comment I want to make is in terms of maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever, obviously they have budgets and they have allocation for maintenance on varying buildings. Whenever there's a crisis and there need to be a cut, the first place that people look is in the maintenance budget to cut it. Agree or not agree?
I can't agree to that or disagree.
Well, they say that you can wait till next year to do that. You don't have to do it this year. So maintenance, even in terms of your vehicle, if you are driving your vehicle and it has a slight problem, you can say, well, I ain't allocate for that, so that can wait till another time. And it becomes worse and worse until the vehicle breaks down. So there must be an approach to maintenance. And maintenance must not be seen as dealing with a problem, but as being preventative in its approach. So if people develop preventative systems, you won't have a problem. The next difficulty that you have is that is the type of contractual arrangements that you've made with the particular building that you're building. We have been introduced in this country to something called a bolt system. It is new, relatively new, the contract management and so on. And therefore, many of the bolt contracts, the investor is in control of the technical staff. And there's no independent technical staff with teeth that can enforce regulations, and particularly in many of these bolt situations. So you end up with problems and difficulties. You end up with choice of materials based on cost. The specifications are not specifications that are standard and that can be held to. And therefore, people put in things that don't necessarily last for the length of time that is necessary for them to last in a new investment. So you're constrained by cost. And you will tend to buy things that are cheaper than things that will last because of the expense. So specifications are important. How you specify a project, what you have in the project that is specified, and how they are to be delivered is extremely important in any project. So if you start wrong, you can't end right.
Fair enough.
If you build a house and you build it in such a way that the wind flow is inhibited, you expect that the house will get hot. If you build a project in such a way that the airflow within the building is not properly designed, you would expect that the building will become a sick building. And therefore, to deal with that at the stage after construction is extremely difficult.
Yep.
So the initial design, the conceptualization of the design, is very, very crucial to ensure that your maintenance costs remain at a very can be managed and can be managed at a very low cost. So when these buildings get sick, I mean, the problem that we have in many of the Barbados in the older buildings was that they were carved stone. The carved stone was not sealed. People came and changed the use of a house and make it into an office. They did not consider the problems that will occur as a result of making it into an office with all glass all around, nothing flowing through or out except air conditioning. Some people believe that when they have an air condition in a room, that the air condition is bringing fresh air and do not understand it's just recirculating air. So there's no real air flow in through the systems. And people get sick. Mm-hmm. People sit down beside printed copiers and photocopiers and printers and don't understand that they give off gases. So all these things and all these regulations, you will have to have a building code in place that speaks to health and safety. There's health and safety rules, but health and safety as it relates to office development and so on. So these are all difficulties and problems. And when you're talking about regulations, you have to talk about the research in areas of what is causing buildings to be sick, how to avoid it. And therefore, facility managers are trained in these areas and are able to assess and give advice in these particular areas. But oftentimes, you enter an architect, an engineer, and then, like for instance, people build buildings, but there's no way to house those who have to maintain the building. They put them in a corner or in a small location because they're trying to rent as much of the space as possible. So maintenance becomes a problem. Storage of the maintenance things becomes a problem. And there's a whole set of difficulties that occur. So we can't come at the end of a period when you have a building that has been constructed. Problems have occurred in the initial construction, and I expect that you can solve those problems. You can approach to see how best you can deal with it. But often these problems are so endemic that to solve the problem. You have to pull out everything and start again.
All right, sir. Well, thank you very much for your very sober contribution. I really enjoyed it, and I hope that many of those who would have listened to it, they would have learned a lot from it as well, because I think you're so spot on. I have a note here which is a little different, so I'll read this one. Mr. Moderator, can you ask KPMG to update BACO, that's the British American Insurance Company policyholders, on the pending transfer of policies to Sagicor? They said that this would have been done on March 31st, 2018. It's now April 19th. They've heard nothing, and the person would like to find out what is happening. This one, Mr. Price, this looks like long, but it's no longer than a conversation. I feel so passionate about this government simply because I see Bajans as finally being independent and involved. I love that Mr. Stewart's administration is surely effective and more effective than the church in bringing Bajans to their Christian understanding, and I applaud them passionately. When I say I'm voting DLP, again, friends say I am mad, but I'm serious. I love that Bajans are seeing a true state of affairs, and I am satisfied that given the muck that lurked under our carpets and our limited capacity to earn foreign exchange for more than 12 years now, that this government is doing the right and best things. Taking time and doing the right thing is always the best way forward. I salute master politician and leader, Mr. Frondell Stewart. And this other one is saying, Sanka, I am 67 years old. The ZRs did not start because of Transport Board. It started because of the private concessionaires. They could not obtain their buses at an affordable fare. And this one, and I'm just randomly choosing now because I have so many. Children will always get into the better schools if their parents are influential. In a democracy, we have to cater to the majority if we cannot cater to all. Another person is adamant that this argument that we're talking about, this education debate, is like warm over cold soup. The 11 plus is here to stay, they say, and they are very adamant about that. This person here is saying, and they're dealing with the transportation, even on the Sam Lawrence Castle route, it's hard to get transport when you live in the middle. Many buses bypass my child at the bus stop. Then she's forced to catch the ZRs and subjected to indecent music behavior, even asked to double up, and that means in the seat and whatnot. So that is one very unhappy parent. And when you refuse to double up and whatnot, that you get cussed out as well. So anyhow, to all of those who wrote to us today, I'd like to thank you. But there literally it was like an avalanche of WhatsApp messages, and I really can't get through not even a quarter of them. And I'd like to thank all those who also called and participated. In fact, we dealt with something like 22 calls today, as well as I don't even know how many WhatsApp messages we dealt with. What is certain, though, is that this issue needs to be, this issue relating to this in this 50 cents extra that is being charged now by the PSVs, it always needs to be looked at. The Minister of Transport has indicated to me that he will be looking at that, and so we can expect a statement on that matter. Look forward to being with you again next week, and until then, stay with us. Always. Take good care. Bye-bye.